Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale getting it out! It's scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Yes, the season has started and Wheeler Dealer Radio is here to help you. The internet's most dangerous Tottenham podcast is back yet again. I am your host, Skipjack, and we are joined by an all-star panel today. As always, my faithful sidekick, Lennon's Eyebrow, is here to back up my hilarious jokes. Ben, how are you doing?
Hey, doing good. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. And leading the podcast in some statistic that I can't abbreviate properly, we have Michael Cayley. Michael, say hello to the people.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah.
Happy Spurs win.
Yeah, Spurs won this week, you guys, and it wasn't like a depressing Pyrrhic victory like every victory we had at the end of last season, which artificially extended the hope of a extended Sherwood regime. And God, remember how depressing that was? So yeah, we had a really exciting win that we can all feel good about. We beat West Ham in stoppage time when our 19-year-old defender, who had never played a professional game in England before, rounded their keeper. I don't know about you guys, but I can't think of a better way to beat West Ham. Ben, what'd you think of the match?
I was thrilled with the 3 points. Wasn't so thrilled with playing with 10 men for an hour, but we did well to not concede stupid goals to Carlton Cole, which was nice.
It's really hard expectations you had.
Yeah, well, fuck, he had the ball in the box like 100 times, and if he was anything less terrible than Carlton Cole, he probably would have scored at least one or two. So we got a little lucky there. It's hard to really have any real takeaways from this just because it was such a disjointed mess of a match. I mean, we played with 10 men and then they had 10 men and, you know, we had Kapu at center back and Dyer at right back and everyone's kind of all out of shape. So it's a shame because, you know, I would have been not happy, but I would have enjoyed seeing Spurs lose and still be able to say, wow, Pochettino's system is looking really good. Yeah, it's unfortunate that we lost. I'm glad that we won, but I still feel kind of sad that I don't have anything really to say about how this team's going to look going forward.
Yeah, it was really frustrating when Naughton got sent off. A, because, I mean, I know he probably deserved to get sent off, but it felt very harsh at the time. But more importantly, B, that we really didn't get much of a... I mean, we got 20 minutes of what a fully functioning, or at least as fully functioning as we're going to get now, Pochettino's system looks like. It's hard to take much away from his system and his games. I mean, there's some... I thought we learned some nice things about the players. I think Eric Dyer is much more mature than we all gave him credit for. I think Kapu certainly slotted into that back line in an emergency role a lot better than he did last year. Granted, it's against West Ham, but still.
You mean last year when he was our second best center back?
Yeah, let's not talk about that. But, you know, there's some things you can take away. I don't want to get too carried away with grit and character because I'm not Tim Sherwood. But, you know, I thought it was overall a nice performance, all things considered. Michael, what did you think of how the game went?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the main takeaways, sort of pivoting off Ben's point, is that Pochettino is not an ideologue. Like, even in the first 20 minutes, we were sitting back. We weren't there were moments when we pressed, but it was only in moments. One statistic for this is that West Ham completed 83% of their passes. The only teams that completed a higher percentage of their passes in the first week of games were Arsenal, Manchester United, Everton, and Manchester City. So it was teams that were dominating the game. Spurs, Pochettino was happy to let West Ham sort of move the ball around and not be able to make dangerous passes. So, you know, I think the thing I can take away from this about Pochettino and about Spurs is that his system can be many things depending on the opponent, depending on the situation.
Well, God, that's a nice change of pace after AVB.
It's an interesting point because last year after Southampton played West Ham, maybe it was 2 years ago, Pochettino made comments about how, you know, the pressing system that he wants to, you know, employ as his basic strategy is not a one-size-fits-all kind of approach. And he acknowledged that a team like West Ham who wants to kick it long, you know, there's a risk of getting caught out with a high line and, you know, you press out of position and they cut you open down the middle, which is a lesson that AVB very much did not appreciate last year when we lost 3-0 to West Ham. I mean, we were pressing well and doing things that he wanted to do and it looked good, but every time West Ham got a counterattack, they were able to bypass our out-of-position midfield and our high back line. And so Pochettino really seemed to make adjustments knowing that that was going to be what he was facing.
Yeah, I think it's – I've actually been a little perplexed. Obviously, the day of, we were all sort of thrilled with the result. And but I think in the retrospect, a lot of people have been sort of dumping on Spurs, saying West Ham was the better team and all this. And I don't think that's true. Because like Michael said, you know, we were really content to let them have the ball and sort of play it in non-dangerous areas. I think they had a good 5-10 minutes before the penalty. And I think a lot of that was due to Rose not shutting Downing down and letting him cross into the box so much, because all their best chances were coming out of crosses. And I think it was, you know, then we played down 10 men for an hour. As soon as the game leveled up, we looked like the better side again. I was overall impressed given how the game went. And, you know, obviously we were fortunate that Nolan didn't put that penalty home, which is much
noble.
Noble, I'm sorry. I'll cut that out. No, I won't. I'm too lazy. We were lucky that Noble didn't put it away. And it's funny because as much grief as we like to give West Ham fans, he really does always put that in. And it was great. Well, I think my favorite part is how he's wheeling off to celebrate as he realizes that it's not going in the net. But yeah, I think this is a perfectly good game. You know, obviously I would have liked to have seen our attack. We were playing some nice balls in the final third, but we weren't really cutting them open. Mike, I was talking with you about this a little bit in the writer's room. I saw a lot of passes that were like West Ham was like a toe poke or they just cut it out the last second that otherwise would have been really dangerous. Did you see anything with that in regards to through balls or sort of how we were playing in the final third?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we had I think I Twittered this. We attempted 3 through balls in this game. There were only 5 games last year where we attempted as many as 3, and only one where we attempted more than 3.
That's kind of crazy.
The thing about through balls is that the way they're tracked by Opta, it's a very strict definition. So things that you kind of think of as through balls, if they're off wide, they're often not tagged as such. They have to be central. But I mean, Arsenal, Liverpool, the sort of big through ball teams, only average about 4 or 5 per game. So 3 is solid,
especially when you're down 10 men for an hour.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't as enthused. I didn't feel like we were coming that close to creating chances that often, but it felt like we were sort of like getting somewhere.
I thought, like I said, I don't think these were super dangerous because it's West Ham cutting them out. So you know, what's City going to do? Although obviously they might not be playing as defensively, but at the same time, like we were, like you could see the gears turning in a way that rarely seemed to happen last year. And that's what made me sort of encouraged by that. Now again, I'm a little nervous saying that cause I don't want to, I know last year I was sort of reading too much hope into things with AVB and I don't want to make that mistake again this year. But it was something, at least, in a game where there's only about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, you can really take a lot about how we're going to play from. So that's what I have from that. We had a few debuts in this game. Ben, what'd you think of Eric Dier?
Yeah, I'll be the first one to eat my words here. We asked before the season started, you know, it looks like it's going to be either Dawson or Dier who's starting next to Kabul. Who do we want? And I was of the opinion that Dier, at 19 years old, getting thrown into the fire at a derby match against West Ham, at West Ham, for his first performance, maybe was a little much for him. And even though Dawson's terrible, you know, he'll at least give us that kind of composure and experience that you kind of need in a Derby game. And Dyer looked completely ready. I mean, he looked, for a kid his age with that little experience, especially that little experience in England, to come in and put in such a mature and composed performance was really impressive.
And don't forget, if you look at West Ham's passing maps, they were targeting Dyer. I mean, they were going after him that day. They clearly yep. thought he was the weak link in the defense. And I mean, did you guys see any sloppy challenges from him? I didn't see, like, which is the kind of thing I expect from a youth player or a younger player. I didn't see anything like that. I was very impressed. Like
the only criticism I would have of his play was that for most of the time at right back, he looked kind of unsure when to go forward, when to stay back, and where to be positionally. And then he was like, well, fuck you, Ben. I'm going to go make a crazy awesome run and score the winner goal.
But not just so. That. He was putting some – I mean, especially as the game wore on at right back, and especially once they went down to 10 men, he was causing problems for them down the right. I mean, like he was keeping them honest going forward, making some decent runs. Not like Kyle Walker runs, but, you know. I was very impressed. Did the stats tell us anything about him, Michael? Anything in particular?
I don't have too much on him in particular. The thing I was sort of thinking about with Dyer, and this also applies to the other guy who got a somewhat unexpected start, Nabil Bentaleb, is that one of the real values of a player like Dyer and a player like Bentaleb is their ability to play a couple of positions. Because being able to switch Kapu back into center back, move Dyer out wide, drop Bentaleb back into a defensive position, drop Eriksen a little bit further back as well. That meant that Pochettino had three attacking subs to use.
Yep.
And it was that third attacking sub who got the assist for the goal. So I think one of the things that I didn't really think about when thinking about Dawson is that you have Dawson and Kabul, you got two center backs. You can't do anything with that team.
Well, I don't know. You can move Kabul to right back.
Kabul can certainly move Kabul to right back. He had a nice...
Yeah, he does that at least once a game.
Yep.
But I think it was, like I said, and I don't want to overanalyze this too much because we had, you know, you can look at that Cardiff game last year. Although we were in control of that whole game, and that was just they didn't drop their heads. But it was a gritty performance. It was a composed performance, which I think was the most impressive thing to me. They went down to 10 men, the first, like, competitive fixture of our new manager's team, and they didn't look... I thought they might even look a little more coherent when Naughton went off, maybe because they just were able to focus on a game plan. But, you know, they didn't look out of their depth. They didn't look overmatched. And I know it's only West Ham, so let's, you know, not get carried away because it's, you know, Sam's probably not going to have a job before the year's over. But, you know, it didn't look like the chickens with their heads cut off performance we're so used to when Spurs have 11 men, let alone 10.
Yeah, I think last year, honestly, even before then, I really can't remember the last time we survived with 10 men, let alone took 3 points. And I feel like last year, if we went down a man, it was get ready for a 5-0 loss.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we lost. What was the score of that West Ham game where we went down a man? Was it 2? Was it 2-0 or 2-1? I know we lost Kabul in, like, the first 20 minutes of a game last year, and so sort of the difference between that game and this game is kind of striking, actually.
Also, going back to something that Michael mentioned earlier, the attacking subs, I was really impressed with how Pochettino used his subs and who he decided to bring on and what they were able to contribute. You know, Holpe gave us his usual Holpe energy thing and played some good passes. Townsend looked like exactly the thing we needed, you know, to put West Ham back on their heels. He had a couple of really nice shots, gave us a couple of corners, and then obviously Harry Kane, which was interesting given that Soldado was on the bench, that he went with Kane. Part of that probably was because he's a big guy and Soldado isn't, and West Ham were bringing on just the hugest dudes as the game wore on.
I would like to believe that's the reason Adebayor started. I would like to think that he brought in Adebayor so he could out-tall the other team, because I think part of the reason Lamella didn't have such a great game, I thought, was because Soldado wasn't in, and they weren't sort of, you know, he wasn't dropping back and doing certain stuff. It was just, you know, I didn't love Adebayor in this game. And I think Adebayor has a lot of uses for us this year, but this game wasn't I think, the right way to use him. Townsend, I was very impressed by. Maybe he only plays well in August.
Yeah, this is one good month. But I think you're right about Soldado. I mean, we saw in the preseason that Lamella and Soldado and Erickson, the three of them, had really, really a nice relationship on the pitch. And knew where each other wanted to be and made those kind of passes and made the runs for each other that I don't think Adebayor really gave us. He didn't really seem like he was on the same wavelength as anybody else around him.
Well, and Soldado and Lamella, if social media is any indication, are like best buds for life now. So clearly they have some sort of rapport. I would just like to see that. I kind of hope we get a whole match of Harry Kane on Thursday so we get a big fat dose of Soldado on Sunday against QPR, but we'll probably see Adebayor again on Sunday. Who knows? Even Holtby, who, you know, I wouldn't pee on if he was on fire, but I thought this was the perfect way to use him, like, especially because we brought him in for a ton of energy when we were still down a man. And as soon as we were even, it was great because he does all the ugly work, causes a lot of trouble, moves around. I mean, you know, I think that's sort of the perfect role for now for these two players. I think Kevin wrote an article about that this week, but I totally agree. Tons of late energy. Is there anything else from the game you guys want to bring up? Make fun of Big Sam a little bit?
I thought he looked good. Big Sam?
He looked good. I would argue that his tactics are severely screwed up. You should be able to take more advantage of a Tottenham team with their first game under a new manager going down to 10 men in the 20th minute, but he's still Big Sam. So
it was really interesting to see that despite all of the signings, you know, Ener Valencia and Mauro Zárate and whatever, we still got fucking Carlton Cole, Kevin Nolan, Big Sam, West Ham.
Do you think it's like something in the air there? Like, it's like how we just keep starting Dawson. Like, we could sign...
He just can't help himself.
Yeah, we could sign, like, the best center backs in the world and Dawson would still get starts just because we are who we are. Like, do you think that's like Carlton Cole will be starting games there till he's, like, dead? I mean, like...
He'll be just as effective.
Exactly! Exactly! Maybe more effective because when his lifeless
corpse...
The
ball is ricocheted off of Carlton Cole's head.
No, because I think he might be more effective because when his lifeless corpse falls over, it'll look really authentic and they might get a penalty out of it.
As long as Mark Noble's not taking him.
As long as Mark Noble's not taking him. Yes. Yes. How long for this world do we think Big Sam is?
Not very. I mean, he seems to, you know, he's fighting with the owners about players and style and things like that. The fans hate him. I don't think he'll, if he's not the next manager to go, he's soon.
Yeah. The fact that he started five guys in Cole, Nolan, Vazte, Downing, Noble, who were all on that team last year instead of any of the new people that had been brought in. I mean, I think he was sort of like, you know, fighting with ownership in choosing that lineup to begin with.
I just think his inability to take advantage of Spurs. I mean, I didn't think they had that many great chances when they were up a man. You know, and with
everything was off crosses.
With a 19-year-old playing his first game in England, and that's the best they can do. And I know he had a good performance, but still, like, they should have done better than that. It's, you know, I don't know. Now, here's the question. Here's a hypothetical question. If Tim Sherwood had gotten appointed at Palace, who would have gotten sacked first, Big Sam or Tim?
Big Sam. I mean, Sherwood's got, you know, Sherwood's hard to fire, I think.
Is it because he's some sort of elder god who just lingers on at teams way past his due date and somehow continues to get promoted?
I think it's because he's a jerk who's got really good connections with the media. But yeah, one or the other.
Does Big Sam have good connections with the media, or am I making that up?
I think you're making that up.
Oh, is that just Harry Redknapp then? Okay. I'm getting my jowls confused. So nothing else. Neither of you guys has anything else to add to this game. No observations about
nope.
West Ham fans and their lovely shirts. I would like to say, first of all, if you haven't seen that video of Spurs fans celebrating the goal in the away section, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you've watched it. But go back and watch it. I have to say, the English, their wanking motion game is very strong. And as Americans, we have a lot that we could learn from their ability to move their hand back and forth while holding an imaginary object. A-plus trolling, guys. I was very proud of all of you. No, it looked like a lot of fun. It was a fun game. I'm hoping for a more dominating performance against QPR, but I'll take 3 points, especially against Harry. But Spurs weren't the only team to look less than convincing on the weekend. I would argue City was the best looking team in the top six or seven, and they looked
Chelsea.
Sorry, I'm forgetting Monday's game. I didn't get a chance to watch that. Chelsea was the best looking of the rest of the teams. City was the best looking, and they looked pretty flat, I thought.
Yeah, they just had, two moments of magic, and one was actually a pretty fortunate moment of magic. Aguero had his shot blocked or saved, and it happened to fall right back to his foot. Yep. He bent a really nice finish around Tim Krul, but it was a little fortunate, and it just happened to be because Sergio Aguero is really, really good.
And I thought Newcastle was a little unlucky, to be fair. I thought they had some nice stretches of play. But yeah, no one aside from Chelsea looked terribly convincing, and Chelsea did it against Burnley, so you know you can't discount it, but you also don't want to get carried away. What do we think of the top six or seven so far, Michael? Any big takeaways?
I mean, I think that I think everyone has been saying that the top two teams are City and Chelsea, and that they looked at to me, even when City wasn't that good, they still had all of that talent up front to sort of put those finishes on goal.
And we can't discount that Newcastle looks like they're probably going to be a pretty good team this year. It's not like they were playing Burnley or Crystal Palace. You know, Newcastle, Cabella looked really good. Riviere looked okay. But all things considered, Newcastle looked much more revitalized than, you know, the damp squib that they finished out last season with. So Man City to pull that off, keep a clean sheet, and ultimately look pretty comfortable in the end, I think is a pretty strong testament to just how comfortable City's going to be over the course of the season.
I don't know. I'm not worried. Agent 00 Pardew will take care of it all for us.
And they'll finish 10th.
Yeah, I don't trust any team coached by Alan Pardew.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to challenge for, you know, the Champions League or anything, but they'll give teams trouble.
Their poor hair choices aside, Newcastle looked a lot better than I think we anticipated. What do we think of Everton so far? They had kind of an ugly 2-2 draw with Leicester City. Ben?
I didn't get to watch that one. I was watching Spurs because it was at the same time. And
I thought you rewatched all the games. God,
I didn't get to watch that soccer one.
The
Michael,
highlights.
You take that one?
Yeah,
I got to rewatch a little bit of that, and they seemed disorganized, which was really weird for a Martinez team.
I don't.
It just was not. I mean, it looked like a preseason performance, kind of.
I'm kind of interested in Everton this year because they haven't made any major additions, and I just wonder if now the league's seen how is Everton play. They've had a whole year to scout that. And last year was the year, I don't want to say everything went right for him, but a lot went right for him. And now we've already got Ross Barkley out. I'm curious. I don't think they'll be awful this year, but I'm curious if Everton are not going to be quite the sterling team they were last season. I mean, Ben, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think Everton, obviously, people have been saying the biggest thing they've done is they're addition by lack of subtraction. You know, usually Everton loses a good player every year and has to kind of rebuild from that. So their ability to re-sign Lukaku and Barry and kind of keep that team together was a big win for them. They also brought in Christian Atsu on loan from Chelsea, who's very fast, to replace the De Lufeo, who didn't come back this year from Barcelona. So I mean, they have something different, but in the absence of Ross Barkley, you know, their option is turn to Stephen Naismith, which he works hard and he'll score goals because that's what he does. But he has zero talent. I think they're going to struggle. They also didn't have Seamus Coleman fit for the game and had to play John Stones at right back. And I think that hurts, you know, the attacking game plan that they have, which relies so heavily on their fullbacks.
Leicester could really focus their defense on the right side.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I'm at the point where I think Everton are. I think Everton's been sort of. It's kind of funny watching groupthink in like season previews, like most neutral site previews that I've seen, like on Grantland and Deadspin and whatever, like really are big upping Everton again this year, especially over us, which is fair. We didn't really play that well last year, but I think that might be a bit premature. But I'm obviously saying that as a partisan.
Yeah, I mean, Everton were also missing Morales. Like, you know, there were reasons why they might not have been firing on all cylinders. But the fact that they can't withstand, you know, any holes in their starting 11 is going to be worrisome for them across the year, especially now that they have the Europa League to contend with.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think they're going to be able to put out that same 11 who clicked so well last season all the time. And I think they're going to drop a lot of points because of it.
Now, going to other teams that are going to have to deal with the difficulties of Europe this year for the first time in a while is Liverpool. They did not have the most entertaining game in the world. It's almost like if you lose the best striker on the planet, you can't play with a terrifying attack and no regard for your defense. I was not super impressed by Liverpool. Michael, I know you disagree with me. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I don't want to overstate this. For one thing, I thought it was a fantastically enjoyable game.
Well, yes, but I did not. Liverpool's play was not what I would call scintillating. Yeah.
No, I mean I agree with that. I think that they were, you know, they created a good number of good chances. You know, that Sterling goal was a beautiful little move and a great pass by Henderson. But I mean, I think they've got the same problem that they had last year. They don't have a clear plan in central midfield unless they are going, you know, balls to the wall, run and gun. And so Rodgers tried to be a little more conservative, play Leva and Gerrard next to each other, and they really still just got overrun. I don't know exactly what the solution there is going to be.
It's going to have to be drop Steven Gerrard, right? And that's a tough thing to do as Liverpool manager. But, you know, we saw that – I mean, that pass from Henderson for Sterling's goal was Gerrard in his prime. I mean, that was a gorgeous, gorgeous ball. And I think if they can have the balls to let, you know, Henderson and Joe Allen or Henderson and Emre Can take over that passing role from Gerrard, it would go a long way towards shoring up their midfield problems, probably without losing too much in the attack. Can they drop Steven Gerrard? Will Brendan Rodgers be the guy to make that tough call? I'm skeptical, at least for now. But, I mean, I think that's the only thing they can do.
Oh, I think I don't think he will. I think, you know, what will happen is they'll get to the point where they're thinking about it, and then Gerrard will have a really nice game or have some insane 30-yard goal, and everyone will be like, it had to be Stevie G, and they'll all break out their Istanbul DVDs again, and they'll forget that Steven Gerrard cost them a title last year and that he's a problem in their midfield. I don't know. Liverpool, it was interesting to me because it's like Liverpool sort of – It's interesting watching Liverpool without one of the most dangerous attacks in Europe, because you could see the cracks in the foundation now. And, you know, Rodgers has been a successful tinkerer over the last 2 years, so it's too early to write them off. But between the demands of Europe and teams maybe not being so afraid to attack them anymore, you know, I'm not sure what Liverpool's going to look like this year.
The other thing I would say, though, similar to the point about Man City, is I thought Southampton looked really good.
Yeah,
I thought
they
Cottage
did.
Looked like the real deal. I thought that they did a really nice job controlling midfield. Ward-Prowse looks like he's developing. So, you know, that's a mid-table team. I mean, at Anfield, Liverpool should do better, but it's not a bad opponent.
No, no, and they're getting him at a good time. So, or they're getting Liverpool at a good time. If there's any,
well, and Liverpool's getting Southampton at a good time.
Yeah, you know? No, you're totally right.
They're both in flux. You know, and it's not all doom and gloom for Liverpool. I mean, I think Sterling and Henderson just continue to reach new heights with their play, which is really annoying. But
it is. These are two guys, you know, that were punchlines a few years
ago. We were all thrilled to write off Jordan Henderson a few years ago under Dalglish, and now he really looks like he justifies a $20 million price tag. And Raheem Sterling is still 19 years old. and he looks so much more mature, so composed in front of goal. You know, he shanks that shot 9 times out of 10 just a year ago, and now he looks like he is comfortable handling that attacking responsibility. You know, they've also brought in 2 new fullbacks in Moreno and Manquillo, and Lovren in the center of defense. So, I mean, it's possible things get better for them at the back.
Oh, it's possible. But, yeah. You know, as we learned last year, counting on things to get better doesn't mean that's going to happen.
So. Right. Why would anything good ever happen?
Exactly. yeah, it'll be a fascinating year for Liverpool. I think it's going to be – we're going to learn how good a manager Brendan Rodgers really is, because I think this could potentially get very ugly, or it could go really well for them. You know, it's a little annoying that Sterling has gotten so good under them. But like I said, teams are going to come at Liverpool in a way they haven't in a while, and that'll be interesting to watch how they respond to that.
Yeah, without Luis Suarez to keep teams honest, I think Liverpool will find themselves under a lot more pressure than they're expecting.
Yeah, exactly. Now, speaking of another team that got a win that it probably didn't deserve, there was Arsenal. That game made me really frustrated. I was kind of encouraged to see how out of sorts Arsenal looked. I was not impressed. They didn't look like they knew how to pass the ball to each other, and 4 of those 5 midfielders have played with each other for significant periods of time. That was a really flat performance against a Palace side that I think everyone was expecting to just roll over and die.
Yeah.
Ben, you live with an Arsenal fan. What was your thoughts on the game?
Well, Jack Wilshere's not good.
God, that makes, like, even if Arsenal get, like, figured out and somehow, like, stay top of the table, like, at least he sucks. Like, at least we have that.
Yeah, I mean, and he looked pretty good in preseason. But he just keeps getting chances and he keeps not delivering. You know, Ramsey did his usual fucking Aaron Ramsey thing where he saves the day, even though he was 100% offside on that goal.
That makes me so mad. We would have been called offside on a goal like that. I just know it in my heart of hearts.
You know, I mean, I don't know if Yaya Sanogo was starting by design or necessity, but he was appalling.
I hope he started by senility. Like, I hope. I couldn't work that out. It was like either Arsene Wenger is super arrogant, Giroud is not fit, which is probably the answer, or like...
Well, Giroud played today against Besiktas.
Maybe he was saving him for that
and also
game.
Also looked terrible.
Yeah, if how'd that look, go for him, by the way?
If you look at... there's a Vine or GIF or whatever.
Yeah,
find
yeah.
it of Aaron Ramsey scoops the ball over the top for Giroud, and Giroud gets himself one-on-one with the keeper and just falls over the ball and shanks it. It's amazing.
Giroud's turning into
I believe the
find
is entitled "Fucking Fuck Olivier Giroud."
Giroud's basically turning into attractive Pavlyuchenko. No, because like Pavlyuchenko came here and was like decent, and then he turned into what we know him as, where he's like the Russian space program on a football pitch. Like,
you're just seem to be implying that Pavlyuchenko's not handsome, and how dare you?
Yeah, well. Yeah. You know, excuse me for not thinking Stewie from Family Guy will look attractive when he grows up.
Sanchez, he looked good, but he looked alone. You know, he didn't really seem to know what to do with any of his teammates yet. And obviously, that's the thing that's going to come in time. You know, he took a couple too many touches and found himself muscled off the ball a bunch. He's clearly good.
I thought he didn't look great on Saturday, but I thought it was, you know, he's clearly still learning how to play with this team, and that is almost certainly the reason he didn't look great. And I hate that they have Alexis Sanchez. It makes me really mad.
And when they get Ozil and Walcott back, if they ever get Walcott back, you know, they're going to have 2 guys who like to play a similar kind of way that he does, and so maybe things will go better. But yeah, they didn't look super sharp, and they lost Gibbs to injury during that game. They lost Arteta today. You know, Mertesacker still coming back. Arsenal's defense really can't sustain.
Don't say that injuries. Because we always say that, and they somehow figure it out anyway.
They have to play a back line of Monreal and Chambers and Koscielny with Flamini and Ramsey. I don't know.
And they still won't drop points.
It's just not super safe.
You know they won't drop points because that's what always happens with a stupid team. Ugh, hate Arsenal.
I'm still hopeful that their really thin defense is going to hurt them. But the thing I would say about this game is that Crystal Palace created nothing. They had the goal, the Hangalan goal, was their only shot from the danger zone, their only shot from inside the box.
I thought it was to their credit that Arsenal just wasn't overrunning them. Like, Arsenal didn't score a goal from open play in that game. And, like, you know, given that they're all, like, beating off to the idea of being the legacy of Ajax over there, like, you know, that's a little bit telling, I thought. And I think Palace had something to do with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying that, like, there's, you know, two sides of it. Arsenal's attack looked pretty blah, but Arsenal did not. I mean, Crystal Palace's game is not just to sit deep; it's also to sit deep and counter and come down the flanks. And they got nothing that way.
That was their game, you mean?
Yeah.
We're all going to lament the fact that we don't get to see what Total Tim looks like at Crystal Palace, but we can dream the eternal dream, I suppose.
Mila Jednak, striker. Marwan Shamak, say wingback.
I thought Shamak didn't look half bad in this game. Like, I was hoping he'd score a screamer, because he was making some nice moves in the midfield every now and then, and I was just like, please, God, let Shamak. With his hair, like, he's like an evolving Pokemon with the way his hair looks these days. Like, I mean, what is that now? It's like got a rat tail going on his weird, like, aqua-gelled mohawk, which isn't really a mohawk. It's just him, like, scrunching his hair up in the middle, like...
I think his goal is to have every hairstyle at once.
I think you're right. He looks like an N64 character that didn't render properly. Like, the polygons on his head don't quite work out, and it's like he looks like a glitch in GoldenEye. That's what, and he plays that way too. Actually, yes. Shamak is a glitch in GoldenEye. That describes everything about him accurately, except being French.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Nailed it. Move on.
Yeah, nailed it. Hashtag done and dusted. I thought that United game was really funny. What did you think, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was... on the one hand, you know, it was really all about Swansea being really clinical with their chances. They didn't create that much, but Key and Gilfie were brilliant when they got the chances. But I also felt that, like, it looked like that three-man back line that was so brilliant in preseason, and it was so brilliant, you know, for the Dutch up against Spain, up against Chile. Suddenly you come into the Premier League season against a team that's prepared for it, that's playing one striker, and they know exactly how to deal with it. You know, United created almost nothing, and they were wasting a man at the back. Make a change to four at the back, and they played okay, but made me hopeful that Louis van Gaal is not sort of the genius that's going to recover this team without a lot of additions.
Well, Ben, you've been talking to me about that lately, this whole, like, the narrative that's been built around United and van Gaal and how, you know, what they have created they are now destroying. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, as soon as van Gaal got appointed, it was suddenly like, you know, the savior has cometh, you know, all will be right for Manchester United. And then he did his miraculous thing with the Netherlands. And so everyone kind of anointed Manchester United as a title contender with no real evidence why that should be the case, other than Louis van Gaal talks a really big game. But, I mean, it was apparent to see that, you know, nothing that van Gaal can do can compensate for the fact that they've got a back line of Chris Smalling, Phil Jones, and Tyler Blackett, you know, and Ashley Young playing left back. It's
hey, at least Ashley Young was involved in one shot on target this weekend, at least.
Oh, that was so gross.
It was so funny.
I watched that like 100 times in a row. I just could not stop looking at it, and I was disgusted every time, but I just kept that vine going for like 20 minutes.
It's the angle it comes in. You expect it to come down, and it's like coming in.
It was like a homing missile, just perfectly targeted to that pouchy lip of his, just right in there.
I'll bet Fergie coached that pigeon.
I bet he did. So, you know, I mean, Man U, we all expected a lot of signings like Arturo Vidal and blah, blah, blah. And they haven't happened yet because, once again, Ed Woodward doesn't seem to know what the fuck he's doing in the transfer market. And if they can't sort that out, you know, I think Van Gaal will definitely be better than David Moyes, but, you know, he still has a lot of work to do that he can't just charisma his way through. You know, it is frustrating how quickly everyone turned on him. You know, oh, he's Moyes part
two. You mean hilarious. Like,
Well, I mean, yeah, hilarious to me as an outsider, but, I mean, as a Man United fan, it's, and as Louis Van Gaal in charge of that team, it's got to be frustrating because it's like, I mean, he said, I need 3 months to whip this team into shape at least. I mean, they're coming from a pretty horrible starting position. You know, Van Persie's out. Now Luke Shaw's out. I mean, even the parts that work aren't in place yet. So, you know, I think the rumors of their demise are a little premature here. But, yeah, they're definitely not the nailed-on top four title-challenging side that they seem to be destined for a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember this was a win by a lower league side. Like Michael said, Swansea took their chances, and they got a little bit – not lucky's not the right word, but it's sort of – this is how sort of a lower team beats a big team. Like, the big team isn't quite organized. I mean, United's got its problems, but they're not quite organized. And the lower team just sort of gets its chances. But at the same time, like, United's transfer policy, I don't even know if you could judge Van Gaal given how dumb their transfer policy's been. I mean, Herrera's a great signing. I think he's a really good player.
Herrera had a bit of a rude awakening. It was Shelvey gave him a couple of knocks, like, welcome to the Premier League, motherfucker. you know, Herrera was on the ground a lot, kind of being like, is this allowed here? I don't understand. So he's going to have to toughen up significantly before, you know, he can bring what he brings to the table.
But he's still a forward. Like, why are you getting him when you've got Kagawa? I mean, it's like, it's just.
Well, he's different than Kagawa. He's more of the midfield guy.
But he's still not the sort of, like, midfield anchor they've needed. And, like.
Well, that's what Darren Fletcher's for now that he's not shitting himself every 10 minutes.
Well, in the bathroom, at least. I don't know. It's just. I mean, they got Rojo today, or however you say it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that'll help in theory, but, I mean, it's funny because, you know, United is such a big name. I mean, they're like, you know, if they're not the biggest team in the world, they're like the second biggest team in the world. And honestly, it probably switches between them and Madrid. But they'll always be able to recover quickly. But it's like Notre Dame. The pressure on them to succeed is insane. And no one's going to give them any rope, you know, like they might give a, you know. Well, Liverpool sort of ended up giving themselves rope just by losing for so long. But you know, like, everyone's just like, if United's not back in the Champions League at a bare minimum, it's a complete failure of a season. And Van Gaal's not going to get that time, I don't think, to really fix things. He's going to have to do it very quickly. And I don't know if he's going to have that time, or if he's going to be able to do it as quickly as he needs to. Not with these players. But yeah, so that's sort of the top six or seven, including us.
So I have
Chelsea
a question.
Looked really good, but yeah.
After these first week of games, does anybody have a new opinion of how that top seven are going to shake out? Or do you still feel good about your preseason predictions?
Feel better about my opinion on Liverpool, although the jury's still way out on that. I don't think United is going to be as good as I thought they were. At least it's possible they won't be.
Michael, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I feel better about sort of my skepticism of United. I had them fifth, but I mean, it looked pretty, you know, pretty chalk. City and Chelsea really are the best teams.
Do you still think City for number one?
I do. I'm going to hold on to that until Chelsea, you know, do something like that. Because Chelsea always do have a couple of great games against complete crap teams in their third place seasons. So I'm going to wait before I.
And people have said Burnley's. I mean, do we all think Burnley's the worst of the promoted teams?
Yeah, I mean.
Other
they're going to be
sort of
plucky and fun. QPR might be the worst.
Well, yeah, but QPR is worse in that sort of, like, beached whale that's dying kind of way. Like, not. Like, I'm not sure if Burnley was ready to be up here, you know? I think they got maybe promoted a little bit early. I don't know.
Yeah, Burnley could definitely sort of Reading or Blackpool it.
Well, at least if they blackpool it, they'll be fun for half a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Ben, have you revised your opinion at all?
So I had Arsenal third, United fourth, Liverpool fifth. I don't want to jump on, you know, the fuck United, they're stupid and they're terrible train right now. But I think Liverpool looked more competent than I expected them to. You know, again, we haven't seen what a European campaign does to their season. But I wouldn't be shocked if it was Liverpool 4 and United 5th or even 6th.
Yeah, I think the wild card in this is we don't know what Spurs look like. I mean, and we, you know, we don't know what Liverpool looks like either, or United. But we don't know what these teams look like. Arsenal's maybe the most concerning in an odd way, because while you can easily write off their problems, like, that's probably their team. They might get a guy or two like they did last year, but, you know, that's a pretty finished product they're running out. And more worryingly, a lot of guys who have played with each other who didn't look great. Now they'll probably win 10 in a row and make me look dumb, but...
Yeah, I think for all of Arsenal's faults, I don't think nothing they did alarmed me enough to say Liverpool or United or us could definitely surpass them this season.
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't say that yet. But so now that the first week of the Premier League season is over, we have a Europa League playoff on Thursday against AEL Limoncello or something. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to. Limineza, I don't know. A team from Cyprus. We play them in Cyprus.
Limassol?
Yeah, sure, them.
Lysol?
Limoncello. But we play them. I know nothing about this team. I'm not going to pretend to know anything about this team. I believe we're going to put up some information on the site about this team later this week, which will surely be enlightening. This is the team that I believe our good pal Andre Villas-Boas eliminated from the Champions League qualification with Zenit St. Petersburg, and I believe they gave AVB a tough time in the first leg. You can imagine that. But we're going to play them on Thursday away. Do we have any thoughts about this fixture in particular, other than we should probably win?
Michael, do you know things about this team? I feel like you know things about this team.
Yeah, so I know things about this team in the sense that I have looked on websites, not that I have you know, been streaming lots of Cypriot football. But
yourself a football fan. You Johnny come lately.
Seriously. Graham and Kevin are laughing at me right now. But the thing, last year we had our qualifying match against Dinamo Tbilisi, who rate there's this site called Euro Club Rank, which basically just does a does a ranking based a sort of mathematical ranking of teams based on their just wins and losses, and Tbilisi rated sort of like a mid table Scottish Premier League team, so sort of like they were sort of worse than Motherwell in this list. Limassol rate like a mid-table Premier League team, something like a West Ham. So lower mid-table Premier League team. So we should beat them, but this is based on at least the sort of their history and the history of teams they've played, this is a much tougher test than the stomping, than sort of the expected stomping that we'd have against a Dinamo Tbilisi.
Well, that's encouraging.
That's disappointing.
That's encouraging. Yeah, so, I mean, do we want to see, like, a youth team or, like, I mean, probably not given what you're saying, but, I don't know what kind of team to expect. Soldado's set. Maybe that's because Pochettino just wants to kill this tie off in its crib. Like,
I wrote on the site about why, you know, maybe we should, if we're going to focus on a competition, we should focus on the Europa League because it's probably easier than beating out United and Liverpool over the course of a season. And if you win, you get the Champions League. And I'm not sure that I really believe that we should put all our eggs in this basket, but it's a competition I definitely want to take seriously. And we have enough fringe senior players that I think we can put out a strong side on Thursday and just get ourselves into the group stage. That I think we should absolutely do that. You know, guys like Holtby and Sandro and Dembele and, you know, either Soldado or Kane, Townsend. I mean, we have tons of Chadley. We have tons of guys who aren't going to start on Sunday or So, you know, why not let them go out there and see what they can do, you know, without having to resort to, you know, Ceballos and Josh Adoma and Harry Winks and shit like that.
I totally agree. I like I said, I'd rather save Soldado for the league. I don't want to overuse guys like Lamella, but you know, we should be able to put a strong enough side out, kill him away, and then when we come home play a youth squad, that would be my ideal situation. But I think by all accounts, by what I've read about the Zenit series, I think they're very well organized, and I know that's like a cliche thing to say, but I think we'll have to work a little bit to break them down. I don't think I think that bears out what you know, what Michael said about their sort of world club ranking.
Yeah. The other thing I'm concerned about is that they're called AEL Limassol, but I think the L stands for Limassol.
and it's redundant.
Exactly. It's very troubling to me.
That's
like
the reason
KFC
why they haven't
chicken.
That's the reason why they haven't won the Champions League, because of their weird name. Not because they're from Cyprus. So sort of bouncing off of this, I want to talk a little about the Europa League. I think barring a catastrophe or just Pochettino really punting on it, we're probably going to be in the group stage this year. I think that's a safe bet. So we're another year of trips to hopefully not the Ukraine. You know, Eastern Europe and points beyond. But it should be an interesting journey. Now, Ben, you wrote a nice article for the site about how we should focus on the Europa League. And having just toured,
literally just said that.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm about to get back to you on that. And having literally just toured the Atletico Madrid stadium and seeing two of those UEFA Cups like right next to each other, those things look awesome. We should totally try to win one. Like, those things are great. Like, that is a great looking cup, you guys. So
it's like, weird. It's weird to me how much disdain the English teams seem to hold for the competition. You know, given how seriously everybody else in Europe seems to take it.
It's the group stage. It's because all the group stage games are against teams like. I mean, it's hard. You get it when you play teams like FC Sheriff. I mean, seriously, that team didn't exist until like Chelsea was founded. I mean. It's ridiculous.
I don't know. It's fun to watch your team go out there and beat the shit out of somebody, even if it's a terrible team.
I guess, but it's like when you're going all the way to
I enjoy Soldado scoring a hat trick or whatever against Dinamo Tbilisi.
You know what I didn't enjoy? Playing like Anzi Makalaka Chaka in like in front of an empty stadium in Moscow on like a frozen pitch. Like, that game was awful.
Yeah, I mean, is it the Champions League? No, but it's where we are. So to not take it seriously,
I agree with you. It's absurd. I'm just telling you. I'm just cracking my voice. No, I'm just telling you why.
Puberty's tough.
It gets
better, Greg.
That's what I hear. I think hopefully one day a woman will pay attention to me.
Let's not get carried away here.
No, but I'm telling you, I think that's why the English don't take it seriously, because you go to these weird...
But again, you know, everybody has... I mean, Atletico Madrid has to play the same fucking game.
You're right. No, you're right. But
fine.
I'm just saying, like, in a typical group stage, you're likely to get, what, one team you've probably heard of before, or heard of slash respect, like, in the Europa League. That's where it comes from. And if you're in the Europa League, you've probably fallen just short of the Champions League. So I get where it comes from. I think it's an awesome competition. I think obviously it's bloated. If I was UEFA, I would make it the whole thing straight knockout just to differentiate it from the Champions League. But obviously,
yeah, and obviously, like, the third place winners falling into it is
that's
shitty.
Dumb as hell.
Yeah.
And I know why it's the same reason they won't make it straight knockout, because it's money and it's clubs and whatever. But it's a fun, you know, especially once you get to the knockout stages, it's a fun competition. You know, who have we played in the Europa League in recent years? Inter Milan. I mean, we've played some decent teams. You know, Ajax was playing United a few years ago.
Yeah, Lyon, Benfica. I mean, these are good sides.
I get to watch twice as many Spurs games a week when we're in the Europa League.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's a fun competition. Winning a trophy is good. And you know what? If Mauricio Pochettino wins the Europa League this year, he'll have won more European trophies than Arsene Wenger has at Arsenal. If that's not a bit of banter you could get behind, I don't know what is.
And more than Jose at Chelsea.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But that, I think that also shows how hard it is to win these competitions. Like, it's so hard. I mean, there's such a grind, and it's like, you know, I think part of the reason teams from Spain and teams from Portugal win so many of these damn things is because they don't have to take their leagues as seriously as a team like Spurs does, or a team in maybe Italy does. But it's, you know, it'll be interesting this year with the Champions League spot up as a reward. You know, maybe English teams do start taking it more seriously this year. Maybe Italian teams, maybe German teams. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that affects the competition. Because the excuse for ignoring the Europa League, I feel like, is always, oh, well, we got to make Champions League. And now that's gone. In fact, like you said, Ben, it might be an easier way to make the Champions League. So it'll be fun. It'll be a fun competition, I think. You know, hopefully we get teams that are a little more interesting than the best that Cyprus has to offer. No offense to Cyprus, but, you know, it's more Spurs games. So, yay, Europa League, right?
Yeah.
And the trophy looks better than the European Cup. So there, I'll say it.
The UEFA Cup
looks better than the European Cup, which is the name of the trophy they award at the end of the Champions League. Ben, don't you watch any soccer?
Apparently not.
So they call it the European Cup. They don't call it, you know, the branded Champions. UEFA.
Nope, it's the actual trophy itself is called the European Cup.
I gotta give him credit for that.
And you know that if you weren't some Johnny Come Lately Americans. Jeez.
How long? You didn't start watching football until recently, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. So now that we've moved on from that piece of fun talk, I think it's time to lower our IQ and talk about the transfer market. What do you guys think?
So we're going to lower IQ, and then we're going to go to the mailbag?
Yeah,
we have much room left to go.
We're just going to be banging bones together by the end of this podcast. So let's start with the sort of obvious bit of transfer news. It looks like Musacchio is not coming to Spurs. No one said this, but if I was a betting man, Villarreal probably needs more money to make it worth their while, given all the third-party agreements. And we are not willing to pay more than like $17 million for this guy.
Nor should we.
No, you're right. I think Spurs shouldn't pay much more than we've already offered for this guy. I mean, he's not. If we had to start getting above that, like, let's go spend it on Depay or, you know, someone who's going to actually be worth that level of money. But yeah, Musacchio is not coming here. In all probability, I guess things are still up in the air, but I think he's been registered for the Europa League tie for Villarreal. Their season's about to start. I think that's probably highly unlikely at this point. Are there any defenders you guys think we're going to go after now? Do you think we can go into the season with the team we have?
I think if Eric Dier can look as good as he did against West Ham for the rest of the season, we're probably okay.
Are you willing to bet on that?
No, but yeah. I mean, I don't think it would be a disaster, you know, if we had Kabul, Vertonghen, Vlad, and Dier as
I'm forgetting about Jan when I'm thinking about our defense.
I mean, those are four good guys. I mean, Kabul's not the monster he used to be. Vlad's still got some work to do. Dyer's got some growing up to do, and Vertonghen's got some petulance to cut out. But I mean, they're all good players, and I think, you know, that's more center backs than Arsenal has. It's more than Chelsea has.
Yeah. I really want a second good center back. I would love Yunus Kabul to be that second good center back, but he wasn't it last year. He was fine against West Ham, but he didn't have that much to do, and he didn't do much.
He got caught out a couple times. I don't know if it's rust or if he's just lost a step. But
I mean, he got trucked by Carlton Cole. Steps.
Yeah, I mean, ugh.
I do not, and Vlad is still a crazy person. Dier is 20, 19. Kabul, I worry isn't good enough. I think we need a second center back.
If Dier could be that guy, that's great. But if I'm Spurs, I'm not taking that chance.
Like, maybe Pochettino loves Vlad, and he's been amazing in training. He's getting him ready. But otherwise, I think we need to spend.
Was he on the bench?
No, Dawson was. No.
That's kind of weird to me. That Vlad, he's not fighting an injury or anything.
He was coming back from a back injury. That's why he wasn't on the U.S. tour.
Why does everyone on this team have some weird injury we never heard of before? So we got that. The other piece of business, which I don't think we talked about last week, is we signed DeAndre Yedlin from Seattle Sounders. Now, we probably won't have him until January at the earliest. My guess is probably not till the beginning of summer. But what do we think of that? Obviously, we're all Americans, so we're all super excited to see Rufio come to our club. But he's a very raw talent, right, Michael?
Yeah, he's extremely fast and not
strong too.
Yeah, he's fast. He's strong. I mean, he's fast for a young fullback. Like he's got crazy tools.
He's Walker fast, isn't he, or thereabouts?
They say he ran a 4.24 40, which is fucking hella fast.
Which is significantly faster than Walker. I've from what I've seen, he's not a great defender. He's a reasonably good attacker. The thing that I think is I worry about Kyle Walker.
Health-wise?
Both health-wise, and he strikes me as a sort of player who when the cliff hits, it's going to hit hard. Like it hit Glenn Johnson.
That's got to be at least 3 or 4 years away in the worst case.
Less scenario, injuries.
Right? Yeah. What's his injury now? Is it a knee or is it – I can't remember.
It's foot. It's his hip, right?
You're right, yeah. Ugh. Well, we'll see. I think Yedlin's a smart buy. A lot of people are decrying it.
Oh, yeah, super cheap.
Yeah, it's super cheap for a guy with a ton of potential. And for Spurs, he's American and he's a big American prospect. Now, a lot of people are saying that's the only reason he was bought. It's certainly part of the reason he was bought. But, yeah, he's like, you know, I think Kevin said it in multiple places, but he's either going to be his ceiling is the best right back in the world, and his floor is a decent American player. Like, we'll be able to get this money back if we want to get rid of him in 3 years. But
yeah. I mean, he was cheap at twice the price. I mean, $2 million is nothing.
Now, I don't think we're going to see him on Spurs for at least 2 or 3 years because I think he's got some deficiencies for an MLS player, let alone a player in Europe. Now, I think these are – I mean, I think in a lot of ways he's Kyle Walker 3 or 4 years ago, probably more raw. But it's that he's a physical freak who's like still learning the intricacies of his game. I think he's more apt to do that at Spurs than he was at Sounders. But – you know, it's probably a transactional purchase, but you know, he's a prospect with some talent. I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest with you. Other transfer news. Shifting on another seamless transition. Depay. We are linked with Memphis Depay, who has the best name in world football, other than Omar Cummings. Memphis Depay, the Dutch winger for PSV, who I thought had a pretty impressive World Cup. I know Ben's going to disagree with me. But look good. PSV winger. PSV, I feel like, has a decent success rate churning out players. I'm interested in him. Obviously, a lot of stat heads rate him highly. Ben is a little skeptical of that. Ben, you want to start before we turn it over to our resident stat head?
Sure. So I thought Depay had a very good World Cup. I mean, you know, he didn't play a lot, but when he did, he was certainly effective. But I feel like his performances were kind of reminiscent of the Townsend coming off the bench in West Ham. Is he's really fast, he dribbles really well, and he shoots a lot. And we already have that guy. His name's Andros Townsend. You know, Depay's goal-scoring record in Holland is very, very good. So that's one thing that Townsend doesn't have. Is the ability to actually finish the absurd number of shots he takes. But, you know, Josie scored 20 goals, 20-plus goals in Holland, and we've seen what he looks like at Sunderland. So I'm always a little leery when it comes to Eredivisie players. You know, for every Wilfred Bony, there's a Josie. For every Luis Suarez, there's an Afonso Alves. He might be awesome. He might not be. You know, there's other things that people like, the stats people. I was talking to Ted Knutson about it today from Stats Bomb, and He was saying he has elite key pass numbers. Sorry, Michael, to step on your stat toes. But, yeah, he averages like 2 to 3 key passes a game. And Ted was saying that out of everybody in Europe, nobody takes shots taken plus key passes. Only Messi and Ronaldo have that volume that Depay does. So he's in very good company. In that respect, I have no idea how predictive that is of anything, if whether that just a high volume of those things means something other than, yeah, he's shooting a lot. But I don't know. I mean, he's 20 years old. You know, he's not super expensive, and he's all upside. So, I mean, buy him if we can afford it and still buy a center back. I'm all for it. I'm just not ready to... you know, call him the answer to our problems just yet. I mean, Chadley scored 20 goals or whatever in Holland before we bought him, and he hasn't looked anywhere near likely to replicate that.
Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just looking at shot assists and shots is, you know, as you would expect, I would say, is reductive. Depay took over 5 shots per 90 last year, but his expected goals per 90 was at the same rate as a bunch of guys who were in the range of 3 to 4 shots per 90. He's a long range shooter. He's raw. He is rough. I think there's a ton of. I think, you know, he's very young. He's only 20. A lot of people who watch Dutch football are really impressed with him. But I would pull back on the stats. I think there's a lot of I think there's a lot of sort of like player choices that go into especially the sort of number of shots that he takes. It does look a bit Townsend-y. I'd be interested in him. He's certainly someone to dream on. His name is Memphis Depay.
Yeah, which, I want him for that. I'm going to call him Depay just because I want to make those jokes.
Oh, but I like the Depay. Like, you got all the pie jokes.
Yeah. Okay. But who doesn't like pie?
But
duh,
you got to Depay the cost to be the boss. So, you know.
You can do both. You can just mispronounce it, whichever one is wrong.
I like, as an American, I reserve the right to mispronounce European names. So I like that strategy as well.
Welcome also, back to Wheeler Dealer Radio, Brian Mechanic.
Exactly. And think about him playing alongside of Jan Vertanghen. No, I think his name is amazing. Memphis. His first name is Memphis. Like, so first of all, he's like a Midwestern American rapper. Just out of the gate. Great. Amazing. Then his last name's Depay or Depay. Incredible. Like, guys, let's sign him for whatever it costs just for the name. In fact, let's just have our entire team renamed like obscure Southern rappers. I think that's what we should do. Like,
Waka Flocka Walker? Or I guess Walker Flocka Flame.
AT Alien or AT Andros. That could be it.
That wasn't very good.
Nah, I'm trying.
Stick with Walker Flocka Flame.
Yeah. Ludacris Foy for a referee. But yeah, I think we should do that for the whole team. But with Depay, I think Depay, whatever. I think the obvious answer is here, look. If we have the money to get this guy, great, do it. But at the end of the day, we have at least 3 guys who can play on the left wing who are, if not stunning, are serviceable. We could sort of get through the season with them. And we also need to buy a new center back. And honestly, we might need to get new defensive midfielders. So if we can get him for like 10 to 15 million, sure, do it if it doesn't restrict your other abilities. But I'm not paying 20 million pounds for that guy, which isn't the quoted price. I'm just guessing. I think that's how we should approach that. But yeah, he's an interesting player, and having a front line of guys like Kane, Lamella, and Depay, who are all like what, under 25? I mean, you know,
under 22.
Yeah, exactly. That's really promising. I mean, super promising. It'll be fun to watch, probably.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. So now that we've taking a brief side journey into back country. Oh, and by the way, we're after Bernard again, apparently, because we got our list of transfer targets mixed up with the one that was left under the cushions from last year. Does anyone here want Bernard?
I'd take Bernard.
Why? He's 5'4" winger. You really want to bring him to the Premier League?
Yeah, Aaron Lennon's like a 5'4" winger, and he's had a pretty good career.
Aaron Lennon, all right.
Bernard, I don't know. I like Bernard. I think he's very talented. You know, in that Germany mauling of Brazil, he was the only person who looked like he gave a shit and, like, was capable of doing anything for Brazil in a team full of people who looked like suck. You know, I don't think his time in Ukraine has been very spectacular, given the hype that he kind of had. But, you know, if the price is right and we need a guy in that position, yeah, I'll take a shot on Bernard.
I'm not excited about Bernard. I'm done with AVB's shopping list after last season. Michael, do you have any thoughts on Bernard?
Not particularly. I mean, I feel like we're just getting linked to him because of the crazy situation in Ukraine. And, you know, and I'm sure that Daniel Levy is monitoring things. And if there's somebody who's going to be super cheap, he'll scoop him up super cheap. And if, you know, you can get Bernard for, you know, under $10 million or whatever, you know, hey. If you have to pay market price for him, he doesn't seem all that much more appealing than tons of other guys who are out there, and he doesn't fill a need that we have. So,
yeah, I'm just – I don't know. I'm done with Brazilians after Paulinho. I don't need them on this
team. Well, that's racist.
That's pretty racist, yeah, but that's Wheeler Dealer racist. So, yeah, now that we've descended into this morass, let's just...
So, transfer sales, you're good.
Sales.
You want us to get rid of Sandro.
Sandro is more than Brazilian. He is one of all of us. We are all Sandro, and Sandro is all of us. It's been kind of quiet on the Sandro front recently. I mean, Baldini's been apparently in Italy, according to who you read. Or who you believe. If he's trying to sell anyone, I guess Sandro would be somewhere on that list if all the rumors are to be believed. We talked about this a little bit last week, me and Ben did. But, Michael, what are your opinions on Sandro sticking around or going?
Yeah, I'm of two minds because I love Sandro. I really want him to be on this team. At the same time, a guy who only plays defensive midfield is very valuable if he's a really good defensive midfielder and is kind of whatever if he's not. And Sandro last year was not that impressive. And so if this is a time when you need to cut bait on somebody, like, it sucks, but that's what happens. I really want him to stay around and be good, but I'm not... If he gets sold, I'll be able to at least sort of like create the narrative in my mind that justifies it.
Well, the funny thing is, if we sell him to Italy, he'll go over to Italy and look amazing because it's Serie A, which sucks, and we'll all think we lost this great player when in reality he probably couldn't stay in the Premier League. I don't know. I really like Sandro. He's got a lot of personality. It's fun to have a guy like him on the team.
But he's also got a lot of ability. I mean, he's not...
Yes, yeah.
Like, for all your hopey hate, like, he's not just, like, an Instagram sensation. I mean...
No, Sandro, no, no. Sandro backs it up.
The best defensive midfielder in the league, maybe one of the top five in the world.
Two or three years ago, he was just so incredible to watch.
But that's the thing. Is he two or three... Is last year the beginning of a pattern, or was it just an injury-plagued season with two awful coaches? It's hard to sort of... grasp that, and given the way his contract's running out, we kind of have to fish or cut bait.
Right. And I mean, especially if his injury problems don't look like they're getting better, you know, you can't have a world-class defensive midfielder who's healthy 12 games a season. It doesn't matter.
Unless you're Chelsea.
Well, yeah. We can't afford to have a world-class defensive midfielder who plays 12 games a season. But, you know, the flip side of that is we don't have a lot of guys who you can say are top five in their position. Sandro's one of them. So we got to be really sure about that before we pass him on.
I agree, but between the way Capu was playing this weekend and the fact that we're apparently in for Schneiderlin, I mean, it seems like the writing's on the wall. But who knows? I mean, he's been training with the team, so it's not like he's, you know, off. It's not like he still has malaria like Adebayor did or something. Like, I mean,
I think Adebayor still has malaria.
But yeah,
the way he played.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But the trick is that like all the ITK news reports say, oh, we're trying to unload a ton of players, and that makes sense. So, But I don't know if that's just people connecting logical dots or what, because they're saying that we're having trouble, like, guys don't want to go. And aside from Michael Dawson, I'm not sure who they'd be talking about. Maybe Chadley, who I'd be totally fine selling, even if that might be a bit premature. But, yeah, I'm not sure who goes, who stays. I don't know. It's Spurs are in sort of a weird position. I don't think we're cutting bait on a lot of the players from last year. I think Soldado is going to be around another season. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I don't know. Is there anyone else maybe that you wouldn't think of who you guys think is going to go?
Can I think of someone I wouldn't think of?
Can you think of someone who is not...
Can God create a rock you cannot
move? Yes, exactly. Can you think of someone who is not immediately obvious who might be on their way out?
No. I mean, I think there's enough people who are obvious that I don't know why we would sell anybody who's not obvious.
All right, let me ask one who's been throwing around and people don't want him sold. Do you think Holtby's gone?
I think Holtby could be gone. I mean, I think there's... You know, we talked about this last week, but I think there's probably at least a half dozen guys like Paulinho, Dembele, Holtby, probably not with Walker's injury, but Chadley, Townsend, Lennon. I mean, any of them could go. I don't know which one it's going to be, but it's probably going to be somebody. So, yeah, if a bid comes in for Holtby at the right price, yeah, we'll sell Holtby. You know, I think there's very few guys who are off limits right now, and I think it's like Lloris, Vertonghen, Eriksen, Lamella.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
everybody else has a price tag.
On Twitter, Unfit for Purpose, the Clueless Dictator, asked us who our top five players to be sold were. And my top five players are Carroll, and Lewis Holtby, because Lewis Holtby dyes his hair. I would want to sell all those guys.
Okay, I think if we sell Tom Carroll four times, we wouldn't need to sell Holtby. We'd be in pretty good shape.
Lewis Holtby dyes his hair. Get him off.
I think we get diminishing returns the fourth team we sold him to.
Exactly.
Maybe.
That's my whole strategy. You've sussed it out, Michael.
It's a good question.
It's a question, the top five guys we want to get sold or in terms of likelihood?
Let's go and double check.
Well, we can address it both ways.
Yeah, who do you think will get sold? Let's start there.
I mean, Sandro for Schneiderlin and Chadley for a Depay both seem very, very plausible to me. I think those are kind of the no-brainers. And then it's going to be one of Dembele, Paulinho, or Holtby, I think, to go as well. Holtby seems to have more of a market for him. Paulinho, we kind of spent too much on that it really limits the number of teams we could sell him to at a price Levy will be comfortable with. So, you know, unless Vidal to Man U happens and Nube is, like, desperate, I don't think Paulinho will go. You know, Dembele is another one whose stock has kind of dropped. Holtby, we paid so little for them that if we sell him for, like, $7 million, we're still in, like, a really good place. So I don't want to sell Holtby. I think he gives us a lot that none of our other kind of rotation players do. No, nobody else can back up Eriksen or Lamella the way that Holtby can, even if it's a step down, which admittedly it is. Nobody else does those things. So I'd be reluctant to do so, but I think he has the right price tag that I think he's probably at the top of the shopping list.
Who do you want to get sold?
Paulinho.
Anyone else?
I'm fine with keeping everybody else. Chadley. I could move on Chadley.
I'm totally good letting go of Chadley. I also think that right now we have five center backs. And
yeah, Vlad.
Need a good center back. A second good center back. So, I mean, I think Michael Dawson in the Ryan Nelson fifth center back role is kind of perfect. So I would say that one of Kabul or Vlad makes sense combined with a purchase of, Philly and good center back here.
Yeah, I would rather sell Kabul than Vlad. I love Kabul, but I think Vlad, you know, is somebody who I would like to give another shot under a real manager.
Yep.
There's so many players we say that about, though. It's getting a little absurd.
But I mean, I mean, Kabul, I think we know what he was, and we know the pale imitation of that he is now. So I don't think there's much room for growth. You know, I don't think the opportunity for Kabul to become old Kabul really exists. But I still think there's hope that Paulinho – no, not Paulinho. Jesus. Vlad is
– There's no hope with Paulinho.
There is hope that
– There is hope for Paulinho. I mean, I'm really like – I hate on Paulinho all the time. And mostly it's kind of a joke at this point because it's fun to hate on Paulinho. And there's every possibility that Paulinho becomes really good again. I just think even if he does, he doesn't seem to fit into anything that Pochettino wants to do. So I don't care. But yeah, the actual point I was making was I think there's more to come from Vlad, or at least the possibility of more that makes me want to keep him.
So as we pivot into questions from the commentariat and destroy our brain cells, we were talking just now about sort of giving guys a coach under a real manager. We all have a lot of hate in our hearts left over for Sherwood and AVB. But last year we gave AVB a lot of rope before we all sort of turned on him. I think for good reason when we finally turned on him. But this year, this is a question from Polkaru related to that. We all seem willing to give Pochettino a wide berth. What would he have to do to worry you? Michael?
I think I get worried if we start seeing guys that we know are part of the core of the team not playing. You know, I think that was the thing that, as much as there were concerns about maybe Lamela, what he wasn't showing something in Europa League, maybe Lamela wasn't fully fit, him not showing up in the club was, for everyone who wasn't a Spurs fan, who kept wanting to hope for something for ABB, was a huge red flag that something was wrong with the manager. And so, you know, I'm going to be watching Vertonghen, I mean, watching Lamela, Eriksen, the guys who need to be there. If they're there, I'm going to have a lot more rope to give Pochettino.
Ben?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't know, because I don't see any evidence of him doing something that's so obviously wrong. I mean, obviously, you know, if he starts for Tongan at striker, I'm going to be like, Pochettino, what's going on in your brain? But I don't see a lot of evidence that he's going to do things like Sherwood, where it's like not start a defensive midfielder, or something like ABB, where he's like, I'll play Asu Okoto on the wing. Like, I mean, those things would be alarming.
We did do that, didn't we?
Yeah, oh, that's a God. Thing that happened in a game. So, yeah, there's things that would be alarming.
Remember when we played Walker as a central midfielder? That was a thing that happened.
Jesus. So yeah, like, those are all things that could happen, and I would lose faith in Pochettino, but I don't really see any evidence of a likelihood of that. I mean, at Southampton, he figured out a team and a system and played within those parameters exclusively, or at least as circumstances allowed. So I really can't think of anything within the bounds of a normal expectation of Pochettino that would alarm me, other than it's just not working.
I would say the thing that would worry me most about Pochettino is if he was being dogmatic like AVB was, and that West Ham game was very encouraging in that respect. If he was just pressing regardless of who we were facing, regardless of what tactics they were employing. But no, he, you know, I mean, it looks like he's going to adjust depending on who we're playing, which is such a nice change of pace. From the last couple managers we've had. That's what encourages me most about that. From formerly anonymous, he asks why the writers on the site think Bentaleb is a defensive midfielder. Ben.
We don't.
Sleep totally does. I was talking to him. He's like, you know, that guy's a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, well, that guy's a jerk.
Seriously.
I don't think it's that we think he's a defensive midfielder. I think it's that we think that is a position he is capable of playing. That does not mean it is his best position. I don't think it's a disaster if you play him in that role, but I think there's better things he can do. I think he's much more of a box-to-box guy. But I don't know. But, I mean, Ben, what do you think of Bentaleb's role in the team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure this question comes from the polls we ran before the West Ham game, where Benteleb was lumped in alongside Capu and Sandro, which is probably an unfortunate decision in hindsight, because I think a lot of people's ideal midfield was the Capu-Benteleb midfield that we got, and we didn't really allow for that option to be voted upon. And so for that, I apologize, even though it was Kevin's fault. Yeah. I don't know. I think we were just trying to go for some kind of symmetry, and it is an option, and we did see it a lot from last year, and is this a thing worth doing? You guys voted no, so good for you. It was a test, and you passed.
This is how our site is exactly like the Last Crusade. From the, by the way, my new favorite name on the site, Pochimon, he asks, assuming we don't sell Addy because there is no market for him, which I think is correct, how bad does he have to play for him to get buried on the bench? I don't think he has to play very badly to lose a starting spot. I don't think he'd have to play very badly to get totally buried AVB style on the bench. But I think there's three strikers on this team, all of which you have a lot to offer. And if Soldado hits a run of form, if Kane hits a run of form, I don't think it's crazy they're going to start taking starts from Adebayor.
I don't think Adebayor should start now, frankly. I don't think he should have started to end the season. I mean, yeah, he had hit a good run of form under Sherwood, and it was hard to bench who somehow became our leading scorer. But I don't think Adebayor's the best striker on our team. I think he's the third best striker on our team. And I think by the end of the season, we're not going to see Adebayor starting every game or even close to that.
Who do you think our starting striker is by the end of the year?
Kane or Soldado? I mean, if Soldado turns it on, like we've seen that he is capable of at Valencia, then good luck everybody else, because Soldado's going to be fucking awesome. But given the Soldado we saw last year, I recognize that that's not a great possibility. But I think Kane keeps showing that he belongs starting for a team of this caliber. And I'm really not going to stop banging that drum, because I think it's going to happen.
Michael, starter by the end of the year?
Yeah, I think that I would probably go with Soldado, just like Ben did. I think that Kane's got a shot. I think that questions like this are always premised on sort of this vision where you write the whole roster down and you see there are three strikers and you think, oh, someone's going to have to get buried. And the thing is, over the course of the season, guys get injured. Guys, you know, guys aren't available for this reason or that reason constantly. And so I think that Soldado, Adebayor, Kane, these guys are all going to play. We're going to have to see all what they can do and how well they fit in the side. So I'm not really that worried about someone getting buried, you know?
To be fair to the question, it's not like we haven't seen Adebayor get buried on the bench multiple times during his career. I mean, this is something that's happened more than once with him. So...
No, I mean, for Adebayor, you know, he's definitely – people always treat him as like he doesn't care and he's lazy and he's a head case, whatever. But, I mean, he's a guy who plays well when he feels valued. And so, yeah, it's possible that if he falls to third choice in the pecking order that he throws a bunch of hissy fits and, you know, the only thing you can do at that point is bury him.
Yeah, right. And it's telling, I think, that – again, not to sort of read too much into it, he's been all over Spurs like media stuff in the prep for the season. He was in the kit launch. He was in the, he's in a lot of their social media stuff. I just think it's telling that he's sort of so out in front. Now, I don't think that means he starts or whatever, but I do think that means what you said. I think he feels valued. I think he's not a malcontent right now.
So that would be a thing that worries me. If Adebayor keeps getting starts because we're afraid of pissing off Adebayor, even if he's not performing, that would be a thing that alarms me about Pochettino.
Well, the thing that I think is fascinating, and this is one of the things we've read about Pochettino at Southampton, is by all accounts, he didn't jerk his players around. Like, at some teams, apparently what you tell them, you know, in the locker room isn't what actually happens on the field. And by all accounts, you know, you at least knew where you stood with Pochettino. So, you know, maybe as long as he's up front with Adebayor, we're going to be cool. And it's not insane that these guys are just going to get cycled around all season. So,
yeah, I think somebody's going to hit a run of form, though, and someone's going to be the guy.
It'd be nice for one of for us. It would be really nice if any striker on Tottenham Hotspur hit some sort of run of form. I would like to see that before I die.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Who's the last Tottenham striker that had a real run of form?
Adebayor, 17 goals, 11 assists.
Oh, that doesn't count. That was under Sherwood.
No, that was under AVB.
What? Adebayor hit a run of form under AVB?
Yeah, his first year, right? Or was that Harry?
That was Harry. That was Harry's last season.
My bad.
Yeah, I was about to say. It was pretty hard to score from the bench. Anyway, let's move on to one of our more important questions in the mailbag. This is from White Spurs. Have you seen Gareth Bale's hair recently? Really would have brought Tottenham Hotspur Hair Club for Men down a notch. How glad are you now that he left? I still miss Gareth. I'm going to blame his hair, which is abysmal and awful and atrocious, on those Continentals getting to him. And really, leading him astray from his good British morals, because that hair is unforgivable. It's like, something Anna Kendrick should be wearing that hairstyle, not Gareth Bale.
I would take that hair if we could get those biceps. Boy.
Well,
Gareth Bale looks jacked.
Do you think they're ejecting performance enhancers through his follicle implants? Do you think that's what's happening here?
I think Gareth Bale just is a performance-enhancing drug.
They test at Real Madrid. They test for steroids, HGH, and Gareth Bale.
Yeah, he keeps failing. So
he keeps coming up as Michael Dawson. How's that happening?
I do think we should make a distinction here, though, because if someone wears a ponytail and they shouldn't wear a ponytail, you're like, you shouldn't wear a ponytail. It's not because you shouldn't have long hair. Bale's hair is okay. He's wearing a headband.
Yeah, it's wearing like a beret.
Yeah, it's so bad. And especially when you can see glorious locks like Ben Davies or Ben Davis, whatever we're calling him. It's like, it's just so like disappointing, Gareth. You have so much hair potential that you just squandered away in Madrid. It's just so disappointing.
It's a big headband. It's not like just like a little thin thing that holds it back. It's an active choice to have a headband.
No, it's like something a girl would wear on top of her head.
Yeah, he looks like Blair Waldorf. That's a classic girl reference for you ladies out there.
Yeah.
Hashtag you're welcome.
Oh my god, he looks like a backup singer in a 1960s go-go band. I mean, it's like, Gareth, get it together. Come on.
Come on, B.
Come on. I hate all of you. Final question that is totally relevant to Spurs. Star Wars versus Star Trek. This is from D-Train. Ben?
Star Wars. Star Trek is terrible.
Michael?
Star Trek. Star Trek is all about solving problems and thinking through international relations and not having any action.
Boring as shit. Star Trek is terrible. Especially the new Star Trek movies are both fucking terrible.
Because they completely reject everything that made Star Trek Star Trek and try to make a Star Wars movie in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it's terrible. You know what did a Star Wars movie really good? Star Wars. I mean, it also made Star Wars really bad, but let's pretend those don't exist.
The correct answer...
Star Wars trilogy is better than anything Star Trek has ever done. It's not even up for debate.
The correct answer is Doctor Who. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, thank you guys for a lovely show. I appreciate your time tonight. It was a great win. I'm looking forward to some Europa League soccer and then playing, now that I've reminded myself, QPR this weekend. Do we have any final thoughts on QPR, you guys?
I look forward to dicking Harry Redknapp.
That's always fun. Michael?
I think they've got Stephen Cocker. Let's talk about him. Everyone cares about him.
God, I hate Stephen Cocker. I don't hate Stephen Cocker. I hate people talking about Stephen Cocker.
I hope Stephen Cocker scores 8 own goals.
That would be great. That would be amazing. That would be amazing. I'm expecting him to score off a set piece against us because, of course, he will. So, yeah, so on that lovely note, we will talk to you again next week, hopefully with two more victories to our name, but we shall see. For Michael Cayley and London's Eyebrow, I am Skip Jack. Thank you for joining us. Come on, you Spurs.
Woo!